Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Darius Barazonde. Thank you for being here, for being a part of the UAlpha Revolution and sharing with us this space. And as I was saying earlier, as we were talking before we get started, it's so incredible because every single call that we do, the vibration is different. Every single time you come here, there's a different frequency that you receive, that you download, that you pick up on, even if it's just intuitively, even if it's at this deep level of your DNA, something becomes awakened. And what I love about this series and what I love about all of you is your intention, your energy that you bring each call to each call changes the dialogue, it changes how we interact, it changes what we do. So there's no one frequency that's the same. There's no one interaction that's the same. It's all different, and it's all specifically encoded for you and what you need. And today we have Moira Shepherd, and we're very excited because we're going to be talking about how to balance and harmonize your chakras to open up your flow. And we're specifically talking about the flow of money, the flow of love, the flow of now, which there is a very different feeling when someone is in the flow of now. There's a very different vibration that the person puts off, and you're going to learn exactly how to turn that on. I had a friend actually who came to see us about a month ago, and she'd always been challenging with jobs and with relationships and with all of these kinds of issues, but something was different about her when she came to visit us the other day. And literally, I told my wife, I said, she's in the flow. Right now, I said, whatever she's done, she had an awakening of sorts, and I said, whatever's happened, her energy is open, it's receptive, and she could not stay in the place where she was in for very long. Now, she'd been looking for another job for a very long time, and I told my wife, I said, it's going to happen very quickly, because you could sense it in her. You could sense it in her vibration. It was too big to be contained. It was in the flow. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, I found out, actually this was just yesterday, that she got a job with a, you know, multiple thousands of dollar increase. She's much happier. And I said, you see, it was not necessarily about anything she needed to do way beyond what she'd been doing. It was about the energy that she was in. That makes the biggest difference. So every other action she took, it all worked. It all was magnified because of that energy. We're going to bring you into that energy because what you're going to learn is that you may be one thought, one vibration away from the things that you really want, love, money, freedom. And this call, whatever you decide to do, we're going to bring in those frequencies for you. So just consider this. If you've done previous work, if you're working with different speakers at the UL Service, consider this adding another layer of frequency and healing on top of whatever you're doing and a magnification as you harmonize your chakras in the light of God's love and open yourself up to the flow. Now, what I want to do is introduce you to Moira, who is our guest. She's Moira Shepherd. She is NLP certified practitioner. She's a CHT certified, and she's also spent nearly two decades on the leading edge of inspirational and motivational fields. She's written hundreds of articles and created incredible healing modalities and methods around creating effective ways that you can have breakthroughs, releases, openings in your abundance, in your careers, in your finances, and in your well-being. She's also produced and created many different radio shows where she's been able to work with so many people to help them overcome big life challenges, including some incredible people in transformation that she's gotten to interview and help people all over the world create these massive breakthroughs. She's also created more than a dozen different programs and methodologies on abundance, heart-centering yourself to be able to really share your message, and also how do you even develop your intuitiveness. She's taught that. She's also a private practitioner who keeps herself grounded to the transformation. She specializes in guiding people to feel emotionally safe, and this is a big part of what we're going to be doing today. One of the things that Moira shared with me personally was that so many of you here want this energy in your life, and you may be working towards it, but you must feel emotionally safe to let go of the fear, let go of the doubt, let go of the vibration of disappointment that may have kept you from the life you desire. Now, Moira is committed to providing people worldwide with that inspiration to share their light fully, to be in joy, and to be 100% connected to their essence. Now, I want to share some things that people have said about Moira. Catherine B. from Los Angeles said, Moira, she laser beamed right in on my core issues and then provided help releasing the energies on a soul level and putting into words concepts that I've been struggling with for years. Another person said, the precision and insight from Moira's Akashic Records reading was extraordinary. I let go of a person who was bringing me pain, and now I feel liberated. It's amazing to discover the contracts we make with people long before entering into this life and how they play out. And now this person says, this is Sherry Norris, who says, I am complete and I am free to move on. Another person said, what an amazing healing. This is Karen Abrams in North Hollywood. I feel totally enveloped in love and understanding while being supported by the masters. I am hooked and wanting more. Let's do this. Let's give Moira a huge bit of love. This is her first time here, and the more we share and give to her, the more we get back. Remember, these frequencies are created by you. So be a part of this. Share at ewealthrevolution.com/now so I can know what you need, and we can specifically encode the session here today for you. Moira, welcome to the UWealth Revolution Instant Awakenings.
Darius, you cannot imagine how thrilled I am to be here. This is a fantastic opening of energy, of consciousness. Oh my gosh, I feel all this love. Whew, just pouring in. It's, wow, it's sizzling my brain. It's opening my heart. It's laying my soul wide open. And I bless you and thank you for calling that forth.
Yes, wow. Well, you know, we have an incredible community of healers and masters here, and what I love is that each call, each session brings out more of their power and the true vibration that they're here to serve. What I want to do is kind of begin with where you started, because there was a point when you weren't absolutely where you are now. You have an incredible story of a time when things really were, in essence, stuck in a lot of ways. Can you kind of tell us what got you down this journey?
Well, I started with this, you know, this particular field of exploring higher consciousness, deeper consciousness, and like so many people, it was a disaster in my life that set me on this path. It was interesting. It was like I told somebody this story one time, and he said, "Wow, it sounds like that really knocked you off your path." And I could only say, "You know what? It really knocked me on." It knocked me on my path. I went kicking and screaming. And the way that worked was that I had been working a job in corporate for 10 years. I'd been very creative in the first 10 years of my career. I was a writer, a performer, a journalist, and I loved my work. And things segued a bit, and I ended up going into the sales and marketing end of publishing, print publishing, for 10 years. Within a year, I knew I really, you know, had to get out of there, but I couldn't make myself go because I'd kind of gotten hooked on the security of a steady paycheck and just getting a place to go to every day that was familiar and comfortable to me. And I worked with fantastic people. They were really wonderful in a way that made it harder to go too. It's like, when will I ever be part of a team like this again? So I just kind of stayed there. And even though signs kept coming in saying, move on, move on. And even my supervisor said, Moira, you are so underemployed here. You really need to find something that really gives you an open field for your gifts. But I wouldn't go. The longer I stayed, the more stuck I felt, because I thought, I can only send out a resume showing this stuff, and I never want to do a job like this again. So as eventually the day came, 10 years on in this job, where an angel just kissed me on the spine and said, baby, you're out of here. I hurt my back on the job, heavy lifting. And within 24 hours, I lost my mobility. I lost my health. I lost my job. I lost my source of income. I lost the ability to use my body. I was paralyzed. My body was my prison. And that I stayed like that pretty much for about 7 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I had five surgeries. They all failed. And eventually, about 4 years into this experience, I finally asked the doctors the question. I wasn't really sure I wanted to know the answer to. I said, so is this the rest of my life? Four walls, except for my dad, you know, taking me to see you once a month.
Yeah.
And they said, well, they said exactly what I was afraid I would hear. They said, we fused your spine. There's nothing left to do. You're at the end of the road. And as you can imagine, part of me was just shattered. I wasn't sure I wanted to go on. I wasn't sure I could go on. I was still very young at the time. I'm still very young, but it was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can face 46 years of living like this. And then this little voice inside said, I don't know if that's true. I wonder if there's another answer. So the value of being told that there was no hope and nothing could be done was that it really threw my back on my own resources. I realized that if I was going to get better, I had to care more about my healing than anybody else. I had to become the captain of my own healing team. I couldn't just lie around moaning, bombed out of my mind on Vicodin and say, help me, heal me, fix me. I needed to become more proactive because, you know, moaning and healing, fix me and Vicodin was not helping me. My gosh, 6 years of 8 Vicodin a day? My brain was more like cotton candy than a functioning brain. So I prayed to be shown what to do. And I was guided to a wonderful hypnotherapist. And he showed me in the very first session how to control the pain with my mind to such an extent I called my doctors right afterward and said, how fast can I get off the Vicodin? As I was physically hooked, but I was not, thank God, emotionally hooked on it. So they gave me a taper down program. I was off it within 3 months, and I started feeling really restless. Like, okay, my brain is less like cotton candy and more like a brain again. I can't just lie here and do nothing. So I started a business from my daybed. The internet happened while I was away. Imagine my surprise and delight. Yeah, I don't have to get out of bed to work. I can just lie here and do stuff and get it out in the world. How awesome is that? So I'm really thankful to have been born in a time, to be living in a time where you can touch the hearts and minds of people all over the world by plugging in a device and speaking or writing and getting out there what needs to be gotten out there. So I started thinking, okay, I'm still not really close to 100%. I started seeing other alternative healers, and I got to the point where I could be on my, you know, I could be vertical for about 10 to 15 minutes a day, which was awesome, because before that, I always had to choose between, do I want to eat today or do I want to have a shower? Because I only had so much vertical time. So I got pretty smelly. Honestly, food went out pretty much every day. So I didn't have to choose anymore. And that was wonderful, but it wasn't quite good enough. My life is on its way back. I refuse to accept that this is as far back as I can get. So I started training with different alternative healing practitioners. And on the second day of a 21-day training that was terrifying to me because I still didn't have much in the way of vertical time available. My spine, my muscles, my endurance were just like, by the end of the second day, I thought, oh man, there's no way I can do 19 more days of this. That day we talked about lower back pain, and what we were taught. What we were taught was that if your condition, and this is not specific to back pain, it works with just about anything. If your condition has been treated and you still got pain after 6 weeks, it's got an emotional basis rather than a physical. So I went home and my spine and I had a little chat. I said to my lower back, why the pain? Why the pain? And I heard this shy little voice. And it said, you've had a very hard time, and you've been struggling, and we're sad for you. So we're going to keep you safe by making sure that you never get back out into that big, bad old world again. And I said, thank you. I really appreciate your wanting to protect me. I want to be safe, too. Does it make sense to you that if I'm strong and healthy, I'll be much more safer than if I'm weak and immobilized? And there was the little pause. And I heard, I never thought of that. And the pain went away that second. That second. It has never come back. I carry heavy groceries. I've flown all over the world. I move furniture. I have no, I've gotten zero back pain, never even need aspirin. My back is perfectly fine because the reason for it not to be fine went away. So when the reason
wow.
for the condition went away, the condition went away.
Let's repeat that again for people that are here, because it really doesn't even matter what condition it is. These are not just talking about physical pain, but abundance, love, joy, just about anything. Repeat that again, Moira.
Yes, absolutely. When the reason for the condition falls away or shifts,
mm-hmm.
the condition itself falls away and shifts, because it's our reasons that hold it in place. It is our story that holds it in place. My lower back story, my unconscious mind story, was that I needed to be immobilized and flat on my back to be safe. And when a different idea came in, it was like, okay, we're doing this now. It was just like, when you get a better idea, it's kind of like when you've been going the same trip to going the same route to work every day for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then you find a route that's 20 minutes faster. You don't even have to get on the freeway. There's like, is there all this pain and agony about changing? It's no, you're going to start taking the shortcut right away. You never look back. You never look back.
But your situation, man, we got to say this. I mean, for people that don't know, your spine was fused. There was something physically that was done to you. I mean, for people that don't understand what a fused spine means, explain that to them. And then why do you know that what you discovered allowed you to literally transform even what medical science said it's not possible?
Well, this is kind of the way it works. Excuse me, I'll keep the graphic part of this to a minimum, is that in my particular kind of fusion, BAK, spinal fusion, which was of the L3-4 and the L4-5, two of the lower lumbar discs, they took out the discs, and they took some bone from a couple of other places and mixed it all up in a little blender. And then to hold my vertebra together at the L3-4 and L4-5, they took these screws and screwed them in and filled them in with the bone from my own body, so there would be no question of rejection. So instead of discs, I've got screws at the L3-4 and the L4-5, and they're made of titanium. And for a long time, I really worried, what's going to happen? And the doctor was very sweet. He said, honey, you could fall out of a three-story building and break every bone in your body, and that fusion's going to stay. Now, his bedside manner might have left a little to be desired, but I found a lot of comfort in realizing that nothing was going to move that fusion. So the fused area really, really hurt. And no matter how much morphine they gave me in the hospital, it was like it made me not care, but it didn't take away the pain. And that was the pain that continued. It was the pain from the operation. It was the pain from the procedure. But it was really my unconscious mind. We're going to keep you safe. We're going to keep your pain up.
Wow.
Up to 10 on the scale of 1 to 10. We're going to keep it at 10 to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
To keep you safe. So when the doctors told me there's nothing left to do, from a surgical standpoint, there was nothing left to do to alleviate the pain, because they're surgeons. Their answer is surgery. And when all surgical measures have been taken, they conclude that there is nothing left to do.
Yes.
Much like that whole thing with junk DNA that was floating around for a while. Just because these scientists found this DNA, this coding, and didn't know what it was for, they concluded it was junk DNA and useless. Well, just because you don't know there are other possibilities doesn't mean they're not there.
Exactly.
So this showed me another possibility. How could I release the pain and resume life as a free moving mobile woman again, even if the option of surgery was closed to me? I had to find another way. And this is something that I see a lot in my practice, is that we see something that works for us and we apply it to everything.
Yep.
Like that old saying, when you've got a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
I've heard you say that as we go through particularly early childhood and life, we pick up these wounds, and there may be wounds of betrayal or abandonment or even just a perception of something that maybe on its face wasn't betrayal or abandonment, but we perceived it as that. And it goes into our deeper level of awareness, or our subconscious mind, I guess, which many times can be a very limited level of awareness, very simplistic level. And it literally throughout our whole lives has this influence. Can you explain kind of how that happens and what you've seen in that area?
Thank you. I'd be glad to. What happens essentially is trauma.
Mm.
We become traumatized by our interpretation of an experience like abandonment. That is not an event. That is an interpretation of an event. That is
a
story about the event. And we hurt ourselves with that interpretation. We wound our brain because it hurts to think that we've been abandoned. And we wound our heart by believing that we have been abandoned. And as long as we stick to our abandonment story, our interpretation, our brain, which is always learning and adapting and picking up information and data from the environment and then looking for evidence of that what it's concluded so far is true. So it's kind of like if you're watching, say, your favorite performer in concert, and everything is bright and color and lit up, and it's beautiful and multicolored and glittering, and they're singing their hearts out, and you're having a wonderful time. And then one of the techs throws a spotlight, and boom, everything looks red.
Mm.
Everything looks red. Mm. Has the performer's skin turned red? Did they suddenly change into red clothing? No, but we look at it through the lens of red. The light shows through a red lens, and so we see redness. If the lens changes to blue, and it can just happen in a twinkling, suddenly, whoa, their skin is blue, their hair is blue, all their sparkly, glittery stuff is blue. Did they change the skin, the hair, the sparkly, glittery stuff? They changed the light. They changed the color through which the event or the person is viewed. So if we take an abandonment story and repeat it to ourselves over and over again, because there are a couple parts here. And most of this you know intellectually. Let me just draw the lines for you to how it connects up with your personal experience. And that is that the brain cannot tell the difference between fantasy and reality. Also, the brain does not know the difference between past, present, and future. It only knows now. So let's say you've got one experience of abandonment. Every time you replay it in your mind, your brain and your mind and your neurotransmitters interpret it as a fresh, new experience of abandonment and stores it away as evidence. Oh, look, I'm abandoned again. So eventually you build up this model of the world where everything you look at, every so many experiences that you have, are interpreted in the light of the abandonment story. We throw the lens of abandonment upon it, and so look, someone, you know, mom walks away and she's abandoned me, completely forgetting all the times she came back with a cookie or your bottle or whatever it is that is, because the brain's not absorbing that. It's remembering the abandonment and ignoring all the evidence that someone leaves, but they come back. So in light of this interpretation, we re-wound ourselves every time we replay a painful event, and we experience it as new and fresh and hurtful and another piece of evidence. So say eventually you've played that movie in your mind of that one event, mom walking away to get your bottle, 100 times.
Right.
So it's like, I've been abandoned 100 times. Look at this massive evidence, your brain says. Look at this massive evidence that I've been abandoned again and again and again, because you've replayed it 100 times and it thinks it's new and fresh every time.
It's the same event, just remembered 100 times, and your brain, that being that simplistic at that level, believes that that was 100 different times. Now, here's the big question, and everyone, like, things are just flying right now in terms of the questions, it's lighting up. How do we begin to move these energies? Because they are literally, in essence, like, stuck or locked in place for some people, or they're guiding our life, constantly changing the perception, like putting on, like you said, those sunglasses that are red, those sunglasses that are blue. Everything we're going to see is going to be through that perception of abandonment, loneliness, being unloving, unworthy, lack of abundance. How do we begin to move that energy from our life and bring it back into divine truth?
Well, here's the really good news, Darius, and that is that in the passing of the era that ended, that really the end was with December 21st, 2012.
Okay.
The old consciousness started lifting away. So stuff that used to really involve a lot of heavy lifting to create a belief change, the necessity for that went away. A lot of your audience, you know, they're my clients. They're extremely intelligent. Intellectually, we really understand that change is important. We cannot come to the practitioner or to God or even to ourselves and say, I want to be able to sail the golden seas. I want to be able to amass mountains of golden wealth. I want to live in palaces. I want to hang out with kings and queens. I want to do all of that without leaving the dock. What do you say? What do you say to somebody like that? So you say, well, the first thing we need to do is lift the anchor, and they go, oh no, wait a minute, was that part of the deal? Did I say we could lift the anchor? You are going to pry that anchor out of my cold dead hands. So it's like, okay, we back off a little bit. This is where so much resistance comes in. Part of it is because of our idea of change is we interpret it as violent or difficult. The first thing to realize about change is that change is in and of itself quite simple. Our bodies have had millions of cells die and be replaced since this call started. And this involved zero heavy lifting on our part. We weren't even aware of it. So change can be really soft and smooth and organic and gentle. It's our resistance to change that makes it hard. So when probably almost nobody on this call, but the ones who do, who think about change and they look upon it with all the zest and joyous anticipation of, I'm going to have to go change this flat tire. It's like, wow, how inviting is that? How motivating is that? So I'm always, as you mentioned, I'm always on the lookout for how to do it cleaner, lighter, easier, better, faster, because I figure most people don't have 7 years to lie around waiting for a miracle like I did.
And what did you discover? I mean, as you, to make this change, to make this transformation so quick and easy, what are a couple things that you discovered that weren't really available to you previously? Or what was the big breakthrough that really, and I know for everyone here, we're going to be doing a little bit of work with you, which isn't really going to be even work. It's going to be fun. We're going to be doing some of that. But tell me kind of what was the breakthrough idea? What was the revelation that came forward?
It came to me through the Course in Miracles. And it's one of its nutshell teachings is every miracle is a change in perception. Every miracle is a change in perception. This is why
everybody write that down. Every miracle is a change in perception. Yes.
This is why we are always just one thought away from a better life, because it's a change in perception. And so the other piece that the Course in Miracles teaches is that the only prayer you ever need to make is to pray for right perception.
Whoa.
Pray to be shown right perception, and right perception not meaning my idea of right or, you know, some holy scripture's idea of right perception. Right perception as your higher power sees it. For most of us, that's if we believe in a higher power, it's some variation on looking at something with right perception means looking at it through the eyes of unconditional love, through the eyes of the quantum field, through the eyes of Hashem, through the eyes of Krishna consciousness, through the eyes of Jesus, whatever metaphor works for you. So every miracle is a change in perception, and the only prayer you ever need to make is to pray for right perception. So many people ask, how could God let this or that happen? Why did this happen? Why did that happen?
Right.
And what's causing us pain is our perception of what has happened, our interpretation of what has happened, our story about what has happened. If we looked at it through the eyes of unconditional love, if we looked at it with the light of the love of the living God or the light of Krishna consciousness or whatever is your version of a higher power, we would see that what happened and our interpretation of what happened are two very different things. So if somebody is sick and somebody is, and their loved one is crying, why did this happen? Why did God let this terrible thing happen? We can be asked to be shown with right perception. What is the blessing here? And some people dismiss the, how can there be a blessing here? They're sick, they're hurting, I'm hurting. And so let's have some right perception here. What is really going on from the highest truth? The elegance of the work that's evolving right now is to kind of, instead of cherry picking, you know, let's work on getting a new job, or let's work on getting you your loved one, is you know, I like to go deep. I like to go to the meta, to the overarching or underlying program beneath it. Because if it's true that how you do anything is how you do everything, if you change your story of abandonment, then your interpretation of events starts to change very quickly. Can I give you a quick example about this?
Oh, absolutely.
I was working with a woman the other day, and she was telling me how sad and miserable she was because she's getting on into her 50s, and she said, I just feel so terrible about myself and my chances for finding love. I've gotten to this age. I've never been married. I've always wanted to find my partner. I've never had a child. I've always wanted to have children. Now I'm too old to have children, and I feel like a failure, and my life is wasted, and I don't even know what you can do for me, but yeah, that's where I am right now. I really want a child, and I really want to find love, and can we do something? And you know, my heart, of course, totally went out to her. And I said, would you be willing to entertain a couple of new ideas about this? And she said, okay. So I said, first of all, you have every right to want what you want. And that acceptance made it possible for her to take a deep breath to cells of her lungs that had never felt air before, because instead of making her wrong or shaming her for wanting what she wanted, I accepted that this is what she wants, and it's not my job to figure out whether it's possible or how it's going to be done. That's the job of our higher power, our higher intelligence, our higher selves. But we can start with baseline acceptance. You have every right to want what you want. And then I said, and the men that you have been with, because I knew she had several boyfriends over the years, you know, just, you know, one at a time, you know, serial monogamy, like a lot of us do. And she said, I said, I know it's probably, was it ever your intention to be a single mother? Oh, no. I want the husband and I want the baby. So I said, did any of the men you were with, did they seem like good candidates for fathers? And she said, oh, no, I even said to one that I would never inflict a father like you on a child. So I said, okay, so you weren't really set up to have the child experience that you wanted to have. You were not meeting a man that you wanted to marry or have a child with. So what if you considered this idea? What if you considered the idea that because you chose to step away from having a child, because you put the needs and well-being and happiness of a child ahead of your own desire for a child, if you set those baby's needs as being more important than your need to have a baby and have that love, which some people would say that makes you the mother of the year.
Right.
Whether you had the baby or not, dude, you're a fantastic mother. And the evidence is
right.
That you protected a child by not bringing it into painful circumstances. Yeah, I was one of those children who grew up in very painful, chaotic circumstances. And boy, if I had ever thought for a moment that my parents considered, you know, are we really emotionally or mentally or financially able to have a child and give a child a good life? I don't know if they ever asked themselves that question. I have no way of knowing. None of my business. And you know, let me say, I'm glad to be here, but my goodness, a mother who's going to say, I want the best for my child, and if the circumstances are not best for my child, you know, I'm just going to keep on going, and maybe I can find somebody new. And as we were talking about that, her tears just started flooding and flooding, and she said, oh my gosh, you know, I'm feeling 30 years of guilt and shame and regret melting away right here and now. So I let her cry it out. Some of those tears, I could see, had waited more than 1,000 years to be shed. They weren't
right.
Just from this lifetime. So allowing those tears to flow freely just melted away all of her built-up judgment, all of her built-up pain, because we changed the story about her experiences and what it meant about her. She interpreted it as meaning she was a failure. I showed that another way of looking at it could interpret her as, you know, the mother of the year and a most devoted and dedicated lover of children. So that was huge for her. So this is how rapidly a change in perception can work its magic. I didn't have to drill down and explain to her why she had to let the regret go and why it was safe. Yeah, we changed the interpretation and shazam! She turned around the habits of mind in 30 years because she found that route to work, or that route home, that was so much faster and easier and more pleasant and scenic than the one she'd been using. So she just, her brain went to it right away. It was irresistible.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. She had to buy it also.
And it changes every other thought, perception, when that new meaning comes in, that new way of looking at things. It's like nothing can be viewed the same. Is that where you'd say, I mean, the modalities that you've formulated and put together, is that one of the core tenets of why this work is very different than maybe what other people have been exposed to?
Yes. Yes. I've spent a lot of time studying about change and resistance, and that is especially resistance to change, and the vital importance of the emotional component of healing. It's like what I'm seeing is that there are three key game changers in order to have successful transformation, in order to have successful manifestation of love, money, health, whatever it is that you want. The first is that you need to have an open mind. The second is that you need to have an open heart. The third is that you need to have a willing spirit. And without these, you need each of these three, and usually it works best if it goes in that order, because the mind, the conscious mind, is, you know, the part of us that's, you know, talking and thinking and processing stuff all the time. The hanger that many of us experience, well, probably not you, Darius, but other people,
I'm sure I do too. I'll wait for the hanger, but I'll probably be like, oh yeah, I get that.
the hanger is that the brain loves to be right and it hates to be wrong. Because it generalizes and categorizes, it theorizes that if I'm wrong about this, that means I'm wrong about everything. I'm not safe. Chaos will ensue. All heck's going to break loose. And yes, I can't find a footing in the world anymore. So looked at it from the point of view of the brain, which loves to be right and hates to be wrong, changing your mind is like the craziest, scariest idea in the world. If you thought that changing your mind and being open to new ideas was going to threaten your survival, it would be kind of weird if you opened your arms to that.
Yes.
It'd be kind of peculiar. So in the second piece, the having an open heart, just as the brain hates to be wrong and loves being right, the heart, many hearts, wounded hearts especially, would much rather be safe than be loved. So many of us have accumulated so much trauma over the years about love relationships gone wrong or sour or not showing up at all, that we're terrified to open our hearts again because it's just like an engraved invitation to pain. An engraved invitation, you know, hurt me. Now, if you have very strong trauma-rooted associations that cause love to be equated with pain, or getting hurt, opening your heart to love sounds like the most dangerous, stupid, crazy idea ever. Why would you do that?
Right.
So this is you know, we're just bringing up the resistance that each of us has, in my observation, many of us has toward these three key game-changing elements in successful transformation and manifestation. The third is the willing spirit. This is kind of a combination of the mind that really resists being judged as wrong, the mind that really would rather be right than be happy, and the heart that would really rather be safe than be happy.
Right.
That in combination with the ego, which fears annihilation. If love comes in the door, if abundance comes in the door, if we know ourselves as the divine, powerful creators and co-creators that we are, it fears that it will die, it will vanish. So to open one's self to having a willing spirit seems like the most crazy, dangerous, stupid idea ever. Why on earth would you ever say yes to that?
Yes. Well, let's do this. I know that we were going to do some movement of energy, because part of this is opening up the different energy centers so this can happen. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be doing some of this work because we want to gift you with the frequencies and the vibrations that Moira is talking about so you can begin this journey and understand it and feel it. So Moira, I want to definitely move on with that first level of activation so people can experience this. Tell me about it and what it is, why the chakras, and what we will be doing just momentarily.
Well, why the chakras is because they're kind of are the portals between the non-material world, which is the realm of spirit, the realm of creation, the realm of imagination, and the material world, the body, the emotions, the brain, the DNA, which carries consciousness. So it's like this is these are the gateways through which spirit and body, mind and heart may freely interact. It's like these are our doorways to the collective consciousness. These are our doorways to the realm of infinite love, infinite intelligence, eternal wisdom, eternal truth. So we open these gateways one at a time, and I'd like to begin with the first chakra. The color is red. It is at the base of the spine. And the realms of life in the material world governed by the first chakra include safety, survival in the material world, protection. So that also carries implicitly in it neglect, abandonment, so many painful experiences that we carry. A lot of them are stored in the first chakra because we believe we need to store them in order to be safe. We think we need to store all that fear and pain, all those hurtful memories, and all those programs that like I am never safe. I am here alone. I have to do this all by myself. People want to hurt me. So this is where ideas like that live, are in the first chakra. And it's the root of all chakras in the body. So, you know, beginning at the foundation is a good place to start. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
So there are a couple of there's a micro and a macro way that each of the listeners can use depending on what they feel safe with. The ones who want to go with the macro route, I want to change all of this today. I just want to just free this up and set this in motion right now. I invite you to find a word or two that encompasses your feelings about survival, safety, protection. And just for, you know, a second, not very long at all, just hold in consciousness your story, which may be I'm abandoned or I am alone or nobody cares about me or anything like that. If any of it resonates with you, hold that in place. For the people who prefer to go with the micro thing, you know, they want to just do it a little bit at a time because too much change is upsetting, which is totally understandable. Think of one, summon one memory and just look at it. Encase it in a soap bubble so you don't have to interact with it emotionally. Just, you know, kind of like you're seeing inside of a snow globe or something, and just look at them, hold the memory above of abandonment or betrayal that, you know, that's just really in your face right now that you'd like to let go. So has everybody got the micro or the macro version of what they'd like to focus on here in the first chakra?
Okay, I'm going to go with yes, they do.
Okay, yes, yes, I feel that. Just like, whoa, bring it on. You guys are awesome. So I'd like you to imagine a beam of light coming from the sky, and it's a beautiful, deep, ruby red beam of light, laser-like in its intensity. And I'd like you to direct it right to the base of your spine. This is the frequency of a perfectly balanced, perfectly harmonized first chakra. This light is going to balance and harmonize the chakra for you. So I'd like you to imagine that laser going right to the snow globe of your micro story, the one story you want to work on, or just imagine that this intense red light is focused on the chakra in its entirety as you say, I surrender to this light, my story of whatever. And the micro people can just, I hand this snow globe holding this into the light. And just watch what happens. And if you're not seeing anything, that's fine. I'm witnessing it for you. And if you just can't make up your mind because you've got so many stories, my suggestion is to go with the macro. This is my story of whatever painful thing you've had that had to do with safety, security, protection, survival. And just watch what happens, or just imagine. You may hear something, you may, whew, someone is feeling a big shift there. Okay, wonderful, good job, well done. So this is wonderful. This is the essence of spiritual leadership, which is, I'll go first. So thank you to the one who went first, making that wonderful, vivid, clear shift that I could feel. So you may feel a shift, you may sense a shift, you may hear a shift, you may see one, you may know that it's happened without knowing how you know. You may be getting absolutely nothing. However you experience it is exactly right. It is being done. It's impossible to do this wrong. It's impossible to do this wrong. So there's never any pressure here. I witness it for you. Whew, okay, very good. So go ahead and shake out. Shake out your arms, shake out your legs if you're in a place where you can do that. If it's comfortable for you, just waggle your head and neck a little bit, waggle your shoulders. This is resetting your nervous system in this new frequency so that your body is in harmony with this harmonized first chakra, so that you know yourself to be safe, that your survival is assured, that you are ever protected, that you are never abandoned, that you are always loved and surrounded by your God squad, your angels, yes, your guides, whoever you hang out with. They are here for you, living with you. Oh, can we also show you what it feels like to recognize your God squad? Because some of them, you know, they're all around you, but you don't know what you're looking at. It's this kind of, there's just air here. What is she talking about? So can we show you how and why it is safe for you to recognize the loving protection and security guards and safety keepers who are around you all the time? If that's okay, please say yes out loud now.
I say yes.
Yes, thank you. Very good. So that yes has opened another portal of awareness to how much love and support, protection and safety, how much security and stability surrounds you at all times. Your survival is never in doubt. Your survival is assured. Your safety is assured. Your protection is assured. This is where I loved so much what you said earlier, Darius, about how the importance of being in the now. Doing this process helps people to be in the now, because in the now, everything is fine. Nothing is wrong. All of that memory stuff falls away. All those old thoughts, feelings, constructs, stories fall away in the now, because that was then and this is now. And we can realize that there's never any need to generate anxiety about the future, because we are here now. And with this team, our God squad, we can move forward with ease and grace, knowing that these dear beings have our back every minute.
Yes, yes. I want to hear what people are experiencing or feeling or moving through or questions that you have. Send those in to youwealthrevolution.com/now. I've got this question, because while we have these energies, as we begin to release them in the different chakras, a lot of people have misconceptions. One, you know, what are some big misconceptions about love and also money that seem to keep people, I guess, living with this locked energy? Our perceptions and conceptions have some ideas, have some implications as well, don't they?
Yes, they do, absolutely. If we have an interpretation of abandonment, for instance, we may have an interpretation that we are always abandoned by money, that money may come and stay with us for a little while and then it goes away. Or we may have an abandonment interpretation of love. Love comes to me for a little while, and then it goes away. Or love never comes to me at all, because I'm abandoned,
right,
and love never comes anywhere near me. Some other misconceptions may be that, this is a funny one that's coming in. Money is only for rich people. that's a
right,
good way to make sure you never have any money. If you haven't got it, therefore you can never be rich. That's a clue to a deeper underlying program, that the way it is now is the way it is always going to be, which is an extremely popular generalization of the brain. It's always looking for evidence that the way things are the way things always will be. So it sets up this very neat little closed loop. You can only be rich,
exactly,
if you have money. You can only be rich if you have money. So just to kind of open that up on the verbal, mental level, I'd like to share one of my favorite quotes with you from Sophie Tucker, which is, rich or poor, it's nice to have money. So we just disconnect money from rich or poor, because if we never feel rich, how can we have money? If we feel poor, how can we ever have money? But if you realize that rich or poor, it's nice to have money. It kind of gives you a nice little door opening to realize, oh, well, rich or poor, I don't really know. What I know is I've got money, and it's right here, right now. Another one I'm feeling coming up is I always have to wait. I always have to wait for money. I always have to wait for love. And that comes from an underlying program that it's kind of like the brain's equivalent of mañana. Yeah. Free beer tomorrow. jam tomorrow, never jam today. So this is one of the most insidious ways that our brain, with the best intentions in the world, because it wants to protect us from that change thing. Because that means it's wrong. So it just makes it like, not today. It wouldn't want to say no to you. That would make you, give up the game in disgust and walk away. And it doesn't want you to do that. It wants you to stay in the game. Come play with me. Come play our game of abandonment or poverty or neglect. So the object of the game is never to win. It's to stay in the game. So when we realize that it's safe for you and you're worthy of having all the money you want right now, and it comes to you rarely, a bag of money dropping on your head while you meditate. Usually it comes in the form of job offers or people buying your products or services in great quantities, or through a book that you write that sells a million copies. You write the book once and you get paid for it the rest of your life. There are all kinds of ways that money can come to us. And I'm seeing a lot of decisions here that money can only come to me from here or here. It can come to me through job or inheritance. So can we open up your awareness of all the other ways that money can come to you in addition to the ways that you think it can come to you, the ways that your brain has insisted it can only come to you through these ways, if that's okay? Oh, this is interesting. The lottery piece. I hear that a lot with spiritual people. Let me just win the lottery. I'll give away 90% of it. I'll just keep enough to barely scrape by. That's all I want. Is that so hard? And that is an interesting way of approaching the, I'm not really married to scarcity. I'm willing to win the lottery, but I'm not.
I hear that a lot, and I mean, not to judge that energy, but I mean, this is what the energy feels like to me when lottery comes in. Is it's sort of like I don't know any other way that I would get it or be worthy of receiving it or transacting it. Just if the lottery comes, it's like God's message to me that I was meant to be abundant. So it puts all the power way outside of out of you, and then it's like this divine windfall has to come in. And if it doesn't, then it just validates the same belief that's had, but not really requiring much transformation on the part of the receiver. And this usually doesn't happen because, part of this is our own transformation and journey. Very true.
So it's great that we're talking about the money piece here, because I'm always on the lookout for metaphors that will resonate with people. Mm-hmm. Change feels so heavy and awful and difficult, and it's going to take a long time. I don't know if I'm doing it right. Kind of like changing the tire. Yeah, it's going to take a long time. It's a lot of work, and I'm just going to end up with something that just, works the way it did before the tire got flat. So it's like, what's all that effort for so little return? It's just like change. Why would I want to go there? So what I'm coming to appreciate is the genius of the advertising people who came up with spend X number of dollars with us and save 20%. Save to spend. Spend to save.
Right.
It's genius. It gives us permission to do what we want, which is save and spend, which is to spend money and get new stuff, and to get a justification for it. Look, I'm saving, so it's good for me to spend money. So it's like you get a happy right brain, you get a happy left brain. It's just, oh, this is fantastic. So I thought, how can this be translated into the world of transformation? It's like, well, let's go shopping for a new idea.
Well, let's talk about moving the energy in some of the other chakras, because I want to see where people are at. And the people that are writing in, one person is saying, I'm definitely wanting to clear energy from different parts of me and keep moving that. Tell me about the next level that we're going to be working with, and why. Why would we want to work with the next level of the chakras?
Excellent. The second chakra, which is orange-red, and it sits about 2 inches below the belly button. And this is the chakra that governs our experiences of creativity, flow, sexuality, money, inspiration. It's the foundation of our emotional body. It's the emotion, it's the foundation of our feeling in the world, which is so much a part of our creativity. And if the second chakra is shut down, that's where a lot of the poverty, that's where a lot of the lovelessness and loneliness comes from, because we've shut down the flow of abundance that wants to come to us through our second chakra. It's like we can pray for abundance to come to us, but we allow it to come to us when we open up the second chakra. We need to get it back in flow for us to experience abundance in the material world, to experience intimate relationships in the physical world, to experience money and inspiration in the material world. It gets to us through that portal of the second chakra. So a lot of people, they shut down the flow because there's been this tendency to equate money with pain, or
right,
money with loss of freedom, or we associate love with pain, or we associate love with freedom. There are a lot of people running around out there who think, I have to give up my freedom in order to have love, or if I want to be free, I have to be alone. So why would either of those options look enticing?
Right.
when you realize that you can have love and money and freedom all at the same time, and realize this on the emotional level. Intellectually, we can wrap our brain around the idea that people who love us want us to do what we love, want us to feel free to do what we love while loving them and while they love us. It's also important to buy into it. Since we're shopping for a new idea, we want to buy into this idea mentally, and we also want to buy into it emotionally. Why is it so shiny and bright and inspiring to witness the creative flow of abundant spirit flowing into our abundant lives in the physical 3D world? This is the gateway that sets that in motion, that sets that flow into happening. One of the ways that money can come to us is through taking our creative inspiration and using it to create articles, stories, broadcasts, processes, telesummits, to allow divine inspiration to flow through us and let that divine inspiration be rewarded with money. I'm seeing a lot of people having a challenge around this because they feel like it's wrong to charge money for spiritual stuff, spiritual processes. But God would never ask you to live in poverty while you do this. The universe is too abundant for that. Is that really God's idea? That you must live in poverty to have a spiritual life, that if you were really spiritual, you wouldn't care or want to have or possess money? Is that really God's perception of money? Is that really God's interpretation of spirituality? Or is that a story that you've been carrying in your second chakra, that in order to have X, I must give up Y? This idea of sacrifice, of martyrdom, which has come down to us through the ages, through many different religious and sacred traditions. And like so many other things that ended with December 21st, 2012, we now are free, safe, and worthy to have abundant money, love, flow, creativity, romantic relationships, joyful family relationships, all at the same time. It is not God that demands sacrifice. Who does? Why? Why is there a better idea? What is a shinier, more appealing idea for you? So would it be all right to call upon those who wish to take part in the second process to imagine a beautiful orange-red beam of light as strong and intense, the density of a laser beaming down from the sky or wherever you imagine it comes from, right into your second chakra, right 2 inches below your belly button. And this beautiful, gorgeous, sexy, luscious orange red that is so deep and alive. And if you want to do the micro on this, one example of love or money, for instance, that you'd like this light to just shine upon, or if you've got a macro of, I'm willing to hand over to the light all of my stories about love, all of my stories about money, all of my stories about freedom, all of my stories about creativity, all of my stories about sexuality. I hand these to the light. Do with them what you will. just picture or imagine or hear or see or feel or sense in some way. The passing of your story about one thing, your passing of your story about a whole collection of things, a collection of experiences, and just passing it to the light and letting the light do with it what it will. This is where willing spirit comes in, willing to surrender your story to a greater truth. Showing you why it's safe, why you're worthy of doing that now. Also giving you a little preview of coming attractions, showing you what will happen if you do. Ah, wow. Somebody is just picking up these big shopping bags of new ideas. I'm going to take these home and unpack them, and I'm just going to redecorate my whole place. See, that's one of the great things about, instead of changing, just buying into a new idea, is that you come home with, say, a new couch, and you just love the couch, and you realize that, you know, I'm going to have to let the delivery guys take away the old couch so there's room for the new one. So you're fine with that because the new couch is so pretty and comfortable. And you live with the couch for a bit, and you get used to it, and you think, you know what? These chairs don't really go with that couch. Next thing you know, you're shopping for chairs. Next thing you know, you've got a beautiful new living room. Next thing you know, you're thinking, ah, I need to find a place that's worthy of all this beautiful furniture.
Yeah.
And it just becomes so easy. It's like, that seemed fine until I brought in this shiny new thing, and then this shabby old stuff is just like, I'm so done with that. It's so easy to let it go. It's so easy to hand it off to your kid brother or your neighbor or your favorite charity and just, you know, I've gotten my use from this. You can have this now. You can have this now. Oh, I'm feeling somebody just feeling so just tense because I spent $5,000 for that. I can't possibly let this go. So let me ask you, when was the last time you used it? When was the last time you wore it or sat on it or whatever it is? I'm kind of getting a picture of very pointy, sexy, silvery high heels. It's like, I spent $5,000 on these heels. I can't possibly let these go. So if you're not wearing them, all that money is sitting in your closet. You're not even getting the fun out of it. All of that beauty is gathering dust in the dark. What are some other things that you could do with that beauty, with that money, with that energy, besides hiding it away in the closet in the dark? How good would it feel to just let this go and realize I've gotten $5,000 worth of joy out of this, or I've gotten as much joy out of this as I'm going to get. Otherwise, I'd be wearing them. They wouldn't be on the closet. I've gotten all the joy I'm going to get from these, and I'm going to send them along to have somebody else enjoy them now. How generous is that? How freeing is that? What are you going to do with all that opened up money energy? What are you going to do with all that opened up beauty energy? What are you going to do with all that opened up emotional energy? How generously will the universe come in to replace your generous gift of something that came to you at high cost? That has ceased to be useful. That has ceased to be useful. That has ceased to be meaningful for you. Because nature abhors a vacuum. Something will come in to replace it, but you got to get rid of it first. It's like you got to let the delivery men take away the old sofa.
Yes. I want to hear what people are feeling. What's coming up as we move these energies in these different spaces for everybody here? Mm-hmm. And just share with us, I want to talk about another thing, Moira, is the idea as you do this deeper work with people, you move people through energies and different perceptions around their mother and father, their relationships with themselves and others, their ancestral and past life relationships. Tell me about some of the different perceptions that you move people through in these areas.
Oh, thank you. This is such a huge area. I'm so passionate about this because I had such vexed relationships with my parents, especially my mother. I just realized I got to clean this up before I can be effective in the world. Because
right,
what I came to really connect the dots with was that the way my mother treated me became the way I treated myself. That harsh, critical inner voice, that was my mother's voice internalized that I took on. My brain spoke to me in my mother's voice. And it was wounding. It was unsupportive. It was, you know, I want nothing to do with you. It's like, you know, get away from me. And I realized that was how I treated myself. I couldn't support myself emotionally. I couldn't appreciate myself. I couldn't accept myself because the way my mother did things imprinted itself on me. This is not to say that anything she did or was bad or wrong. I want to emphasize that. She did what she was taught. She learned this at her mother's knee. What I'm seeing is that there are two ways that people teach us about love, because I really believe, I've really come to see, that every experience we have is intended to teach us about love in some way. Sometimes we have direct teachers, and they teach us about love by showing us, you know, we listen to you, I see you, I recognize you, I see you for who you are. I love you for who you are. I accept you for who you are. I listen to you, I ask you about your day. I cuddle with you. I tuck you in bed at night and kiss you on the cheek and blow you a kiss before I turn out the light. It's a wonderful way to be directly taught about love. And if people know how to do that, that's what they will do. But if people were taught a different way of love, they were taught by teachers who were what I call indirect teachers. They don't know how to do love. They can't teach it because they don't know it. They've never experienced it. But because they're so intent on teaching you about love, even if they don't know, have clue one about it. It's like, how can I do this? How can I teach them about love when I'm clueless? It's like,
right.
I'll show them how not to do it. I'll show them how not to do it. So they do what they do. They lash out, or they withdraw, or they withhold love, you know, just inches away. If you just do this, then you can have love. Oh, no, no, then you have to do this. Oh, no, then you have to do this. So the underlying message of all of that is this is how not to do love. You see how much this hurts? Don't do it like this.
Right.
I don't know what to do instead, but let me show you what not to do. Some of us, many of us, quite understandably, in our youth and innocence and developing brains, interpret that as love. Oh, this is how we do love.
What have you seen unlock for people as you begin to free them from those perceptions? Depending on, you know, there's all different variations on how they may have been raised, what they may have perceived, what their brain might have done. What happens in your experience when people are released from the prison of these perceptions?
What I saw in one woman's experience was that she realized that her mother had always been very judgmental about her, toward her, in terms of her sexuality. When she was a young teenager, she called her a slut and, you know, told her, don't wear that thing, don't wear those shoes, you're being a whore. You know, she really just, you know, made her feel awful about being a sexual person. The interesting thing is that this young woman was a very innocent sexually. She had no idea of being sexual. She had no idea of being a slut. She had no idea of enticing men or anything like that.
Mm.
But her mother saw her through the lens of her own judgment of herself and passed along the way her mother had talked to her about her sexuality, which is, you know, if you are not bundled up from top to toe and wearing a veil and, you know, don't show that bit of ankle, God forbid, you're going to drive all the men mad in the streets. She passed that on to her daughter, even though her daughter wasn't even doing that, because that was what the mother could see. So when she did this material, she saw that, oh, my mother was really voicing her own mother's judgments against her to me. She was not seeing me at all. So she was able to release all of her own judgment and self-condemnation about her sexuality, about being in intimate relationships, about never making sure the man never got the wrong idea. So she became much more free and open, and all of her self-protective armor went away. She bought some pretty dresses and some wonderful shoes because she didn't worry about men getting the wrong idea. She was just glorying in her feminine beauty and radiance. And if a man wants to appreciate that, fine. But it's like, you know, I am a beautiful woman and I just want to show my beauty to myself.
Right.
Wow. I make myself beautiful.
Wow. You know, we're having a lot of people write in, a lot of different things they're experiencing, a lot of people feeling things move, a lot of people excited to continue moving different energies and releasing and opening up to their true essence is, for a lot of people, it's buried under a lot of different perceptions. I want to talk about some of the deeper processes and things that you have, and part of what you put together here for the UFO Revolution was a chance for people to actually go deeper into some of that work. Tell me about some of the work that you put together for us today, the special package.
Okay, the first piece of the special package is a teleclass. I'm not really a teleclass. I recorded it right into sound software, so it sounds really good. It's a 5-part series to heal the wounds of abandonment. 5 keys to open your flow of love and money right now. So how do you know you have wounds of abandonment? Well, if you're holding on to excess weight, if you have a fear of intimacy or commitment, or attract partners who fear intimacy or commitment, if you've got unending financial struggles, you get ahead and then the car breaks down, you get ahead and your child needs something. If you're if you're battling chronic busyness or overwhelm or distraction, it's just like, I'd love to play with my baby, but I haven't got time. Hoarding, addiction, every kind of addiction, alcohol, sex, spending, debt, negative thinking. What I've seen is that all of these signify wounds of abandonment. Abandonment is the bottom program on all of those. So we could work on the weight, we could work on the intimacy, but if you'd like, if you've got more than one of these, this is going to be the key that unlocks the underlying cause. Like I was talking before about when the reason for my back pain went away, the pain went away. When the reason for holding on to these wounds of abandonment, because you think they keep you safe, because you think they protect you from ever being abandoned again, and you've seen how well that works, it's like, okay, you need a new idea. We're shopping for a new idea here, and the new idea here is that you have never been abandoned, and this addresses all the levels we're talking about. This series addresses the mental level of understanding that abandonment is an interpretation of an experience rather than an experience of itself, and all the feelings of abandonment come from the interpretation. So when you change the interpretation, when you have right perception of the matter, the illusion of abandonment falls away, and all the symptoms of abandonment, like the excess weight, the fear of intimacy, the financial struggle, fall away also. So it's very elegant and quick and simple. In session one of this, we look at your model of the world. That's kind of the macro version of what we're looking at, your ideas about how abandonment has shaped your world. Everybody had to leave the womb at some point. They were lifted away or pushed out.
Yes.
And then their umbilical cord gets cut, and it's like, whoa, what's more abandoning than that, for heaven's sake? And most of us never remember it, but as you can imagine, it makes a pretty deep impression on us.
Yes.
That often becomes the lens through which we view the world. We see the world as the land of abandonment and everything that's anything like that. Mom walking out of the room, dad going to work. Is he ever coming back? That shapes how you see the world. When you're young and impressionable, it shapes the formation of your brain. So this work changes the formation of your brain by directing it toward a shiny new idea of, I am always taken care of. I am never alone. I am always watched out for.
And, you know, with some people writing in, is it too late? People that have been for decades living a certain way, having a certain perception, having a belief that has shaped the reality, looking through the lens of that loneliness, that lack, that scarcity, that lack of abundance, is it ever too late, or can this be changed instantly with the right tools?
It is never too late. It is always, and always, you really are one thought away from a better life. Ralph Waldo Emerson has this wonderful saying, which is, what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. Whatever you've done, whatever you've thought, whatever you've experienced, whatever has happened to you, however you have interpreted it, pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. And what lies inside of you is home. What lies inside of you is your natural way of being, which is one of abundance and joy and peace. This helps you reconnect with the true umbilicus. This helps you reconnect with your infinite source of nourishment and support. It is never too late to reconnect with that.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell people where it is before we go too far along. A lot of people are asking. It's at uwealthrevolution.com/MOIRA now. So it's Moira, which is spelled MOIRA, a little different than you may expect. MOIRA now, NOW, Moira now, MOIRA now. And one of the things, really quick, Moira, that you do is take people through the different, really, I guess it'd almost be the different levels of our connection or relationship to the world. The first being the model of the world you talked about, the second, relationship with mother and father, relationship with ourselves and others, ancestral and past life relationships, and then discovering our next steps. It's almost like peeling or unraveling an onion, so to speak, and going through these different layers in a certain order.
Yes, and there is a reason for going through in a certain order. That's why I always suggest
okay.
that people listen to these in order, because part of it is healing on a certain level, and part of it is paving the way for you to accept the healings on a deeper level. It's like we have to peel off the top before we can get to the bottom. But it's peeling almost feels like a violation or an invasion, and it's not really like that. It's really more like revealing. It's more like lifting the veil and seeing the truth about you, which is that you are love, which is that you are whole, that you are innocent, that you are lovable, that your worthiness is innate. So we lift away one veil after another until in all of your multidimensional aspects, because we occupy multiple dimensions at the same time, in all of your multidimensional aspects, so you can really feel it in your cells, so you can really feel it in the consciousness carried in your DNA, so you can feel it in your organs, so you can feel it in your brain, in your heart, in your mind.
And I noticed you talk about this idea of not just moving forward into being more connected and more in peace and joy, but also moving more into the flow of the spiritual elements of abundance. As people begin to heal and release at all these different levels, something's going to happen with abundance, and you actually move people through a whole abundance home study program to allow people to really then begin to create and unlock the abundance that's theirs now that they have this differing energy with the rest of the world. Tell me about the second piece, which is the abundance intensive.
These are spiritual secrets of abundance, and we cannot really hear them or absorb them or experience them as real in the body, which is what you need to manifest it in the material world, until those first two layers, like we were talking about, having the open mind and the open heart to have successful manifestation and transformation. The first piece about healing the wounds of abandonment supports you in opening the mind and opening the heart. And this, the abundance intensive, she brings in the third piece, the willing spirit, because we finally cleared away enough of your mental and emotional stuff so that you can hear and absorb and experience as real in the body the seven spiritual secrets of abundance. If we go to this first, the abundance intensive first, it's kind of like Mark Twain used to say that fate means believing what you know just ain't so. It's like trying to talk yourself into an idea that yet spiritual people say this is true, so I should really buy into it. But mentally you think it's hogwash, and emotionally it feels inauthentic and you know, really uncomfortable, like a pair of shoes that don't fit. Well, this way you can get mentally comfortable with the Heal the Wounds of Abandonment package. You can get mentally comfortable. You can get emotionally comfortable with the idea, the big shiny idea, that abundance comes from spirit and it takes many forms, including wealth, health, love in the material world. So this shows the seven secrets of abundance, shows you how to use those principles in your day-to-day life, because I'm really big on connecting heaven and earth, connecting the spiritual with the practical. I don't want to just say pretty stuff. I want to give you stuff that you can use right away. And this gives you tools to translate spiritual wisdom into confident, joyful action in the day-to-day world. It's kind of like the lawns, the trees, the ground are covered with twigs. God has created abundance for all of the birds on earth to build their nests in their season, in their time. But the birds got to go and pick up the twigs.
Those
trees do not grow with prefab nests right in there for the birds. It is part of our joy, part of our creative process to take aligned and inspired action. And this is what's understanding the seven spiritual secrets of abundance supports you in doing, gives you shiny ideas about things that might sound really good or like, boy, I'd sure love to do that someday if I can ever stop hurting. it's just like this, the helium wounds of abundance helps the hurt to stop. And the abundance intensive is wonderful to show you how to live, how to be, how and why to take inspired action in the day-to-day world based on sound spiritual universal principles that subscribe to no particular religious order or dogma or beliefs of any kind. These are principles.
Very, very powerful. And I agree that it's like we've got to open up the level of vibration through the first bit of work so that we can receive the higher vibrations that come in through the second bit of work. It's impossible to vibrate abundantly if you're holding on to layers and layers and layers and layers of pain. There's always going to be something that reverts you back to that normal set point unless we can really begin to let that go and heal that. That's the first part of the work. And the second part of the work is really activating the abundance side. And this is at uwealthrevolution.com/Moira now, MoiraNow. Quick question. We've had a few people sharing. One person said that they're having these tremendous fits of releasing. Danielle says, whenever I release limiting beliefs or stories, I sneeze. She says, I've had several sneezing fits while listening. Thank you, Moira. Another person, Sue, wrote in, I'd love to hear what everyone's been feeling. So, Moira has opened up so many doors and touched me in places I didn't know existed. Thank you so much. People are feeling this in so many ways. Quick question from Carrie. What happened if both parents have passed away and they're no longer on the earth right now in this dimension? At least we don't think they're still hanging around. She says, how can we heal abandonment issues with them?
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm so glad you asked that. And let me add, along with parents who have passed away, these processes also work if you've got step-parents, foster parents, adoptive parents, a single parent, a big brother or sister who raised you, or an aunt who raised you. These address all of those different structures of family that you may have experienced. The thing about parents who have passed is that their bodies may have passed on. Your idea of them remains.
Yeah.
They live on in your DNA. It's almost like DNA is like the physical, biological expression of eternal life. All of your ancestors live on in your cells. So your parents are still in your DNA, and this transforms you on the DNA level, and it transforms your idea of your parents, your memories of your parents, your experience of your parents. You can do this work and have living parents, and you never even need to talk with them about it. You don't even need to tell them what you're doing. The work still makes itself felt because you're changing your idea of them. Our idea that they are a certain way kind of holds them in expectation jail. It's like, I can't do this because my child will feel like blah, blah, blah. So when you just see, I know who I thought you were. My idea of you is changing now. And as I see you with new eyes, as I see you for who you are today rather than who you were in my childhood, I recognize that you have different needs, that you may have changed quite a bit and never noticed before. Now I do notice, and I see that you're very creative and that you worked so hard to support the family, and now you'd really like to plunge into acting or painting, and I totally support you in that because everybody should be able to feel free to give voice to their creative expression. And then they feel like it's okay to do it because they don't have that unconscious expectation. Well, I can't do this because responsible fathers don't do that. It'll freak out my child if I, go off and paint someplace.
So this
frees your loved ones as well as you. And they never even need to know that you're doing it because we're changing your idea of them. your idea of them. So we're never interfering with anybody else's free will. All we're doing is changing your idea of them, and if changing feels too threatening, again, we're just giving you a new idea of them, a shiny new idea of them, and a shiny new idea of yourself.
And that can actually sometimes go back in and almost take away the charge for certain things that you may have, you know, when you begin to see your parents as just human beings that have insecurities, imperfections, faults, fears, irrational beliefs, and you kind of take them down off that pedestal. What does that do to the feelings that you interpreted when you maybe thought that they said you weren't good enough? If, you know, if they're not perfect themselves, then what does that do for every time you've taken their opinion and put it higher than your own heart or your own gift, your own energy, your own divine goodness? You replace your divine goodness with the belief that someone else has, and now you realize that person has some very skewed and misguided beliefs. What does it do to you? It changes you instantly.
It changes you instantly. Yes, it changes.
You can't go back. Yeah.
Yeah. You can. It's because the unconscious mind doesn't know the difference between past, present, and future. Everything is undone in the moment, the second that you see it.
Collapse. Yeah, it's like a collapse. You know, we'd call it a collapse of the cans. It's
exactly.
Like the reverse pyramid of cans just has to collapse. And so this is very exciting work, Moira, and people are feeling it. They're excited about it. A lot of people are saying, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling very happy. One thing that's coming in for a lot of people is poverty and vows of poverty. I want to talk about how you address that in the program really quick. Is this whole issue, because a lot of people are writing and saying, I feel like maybe I've had some past vow or something in my DNA dealing with poverty. I want to talk about how the program actually goes in and begins to unwind that, if that's the right terminology. UWealthRevolution.com/Moira now, MOIRANOW, MOIRANOW. Tell us about that. I mean, for people feeling like they have this contract or vow, how does that relate to this work, and how have you seen that actually released and let go of?
I have seen so much freedom, so much money, so much love coming in when these vows are released. This is all done in session 4. Of heal the wounds of abandonment. We look at your ancestral and past life relationships. The important thing to realize here is that vows are very tied to honor. They're very tied to loyalty. They are very tied to integrity. They are very tied to our idea of ourselves as good people in the world. All of these vows were taken in good faith, and it can feel like an act of bad faith to let them go or release them or unlock them. And so one of the things that I do is that I show people how they can still be honorable, how they can still be in integrity, how they can still be in loyal alliance with the brothers and sisters and sacred orders with whom they took these vows, even though the vows are marked complete, showing them why that can be and how that is. Because it's possible to be honorable and mark a vow complete. It's really, in a sense, like any business contract. When the conditions have been met, the contract is complete. It is shelved. It becomes null and void because all of the conditions that were met, that were to be met, are met. All of these vows were intended to teach us something about love, like every experience is meant to teach us something about love. And so when we realize that we can keep the love and let go of the vow, we can keep the lesson we were meant to learn from taking those vows. And I'm hearing a lot of people crowding in with something like, I took these vows and I have to honor them, and you know, God will strike me down with lightning if I mark them complete. It's an understandable fear. I can totally see why you're clinging to those vows with both hands.
How can someone know if they have a vow? Sorry for jumping in. I just had this question come in. How can someone know if they have a vow? What are some different things that might show up in their life?
If you have a struggle with money, and you have a good paying job, and your parents were able to handle money responsibly and well, and you had good training about finances, and you grew up without financial struggle, and yet when you're on your own, you're experiencing financial struggle. Basically, if you look at, I am struggling financially, and I don't understand why, because I've got a great education, I've got good training. My parents were very good with money. You know, they showed me how to do it, or I used their accountant or whatever. And still, it just slips through my fingers. I can't keep a job. You have probably got a past life vow to poverty. If you can't explain it from your circumstances in this lifetime, it's from another lifetime, and it's probably a vow. The thing about vows is that they were not meant to be eternal. They were meant to end with the lifetime of the body occupied by the one who made that vow. We carry them forward in time when they really were meant to just kind of be, you know, be left behind with the body. We carry them along because we, you know, we got used to them, where we felt like this is a way to be close to God. So we show you ways to be close to God without needing to keep the vow in place that has actually had its expiration date a long time ago.
Wow. How many of you, just kind of getting this from everybody, Paula said this is incredibly powerful. Thank you. I want to hear how many of you feel like you may have a vow. One person is talking about clutter and procrastination being an issue. What does that sometimes signify for people? Clutter and procrastination.
A difficulty with letting go. They have a hard time letting go. And again, that can be an aspect of the abandonment issue also, because there's that feeling that if I let this go, I'll have nothing.
Yes. And how hard is it then to bring in new things and new abundance into your life when that happens?
Exactly. So this supports you in coming to a deeper realization that whatever you've got, there's plenty more where that came from. Whatever you've got, there's plenty more where that came from. We live in an abundant universe. How is it possible that that is the only pair of shoes you will ever have? In an abundant, infinite universe, how is it possible that this is the only job you'll ever have? If this is an abundant universe.
Or the only love you'll ever have, or that
exactly.
You won't have any love.
Exactly.
Because I think people think, out of a world of, I don't know, really like 7, 8 billion people, I should know this, but something like that, very big, that there's nobody. These are the illogical perceptions that keep us trapped at the lower levels of vibration and keep us living in the world of pure scarcity, of just immense and vast duality, where everything seems to be so separate, so outside of us. Guess what, folks? It's all part of a perception, an illusion of perception that you can change, as Moira says, with one thought, one idea. The right idea, the right way to do this, and this is where she is incredibly powerful, because she's devised the exact methodology to do it. She literally was told she'd never walk again. She wouldn't be able to have a complete life. And one powerful idea changed all of that. It's at uwealthrevolution.com/MOIRA now. MOIRA now. Any final words or thoughts as we kind of move through this? Oh, I want to say this. It's literally 97% off. So this is an entire program on balancing and harmonizing the chakras to open your flow of money and love now. It is 97% off. It's a $97 program. So it's incredibly affordable so that everybody can have it, can use it, and can experience it. Any final thoughts, Moira?
You really are just one thought away. There are multiple shiny new ideas. There are multiple layers of reassurance, of comfort, of hope and joy, of safety for you in doing this. All you need is one idea, as I found, that can totally turn your life around, that changed the way my body worked, which changed the way I lived.
Yes.
Which changed my relationship with life, with love, with my higher power, and made it possible for me to move forward again. All it took was one idea, and this interview is loaded with shiny new ideas. All you need is one really good one. If you haven't found anything that resonates with you, there are a lot of other shiny new ideas waiting for you in all of Darius's interviews. There are shiny new ideas waiting for you in these packages, Heal the Wounds of Abandonment and the 7 Spiritual Secrets of Abundance. All you need is one to really get you up and running. It's a one right perception.
It's
the only miracle you're ever going to need. And everything else is just decoration or details or just naturally flows from that.
You know, for people that feel like there's no possibility, for people that maybe right now I know a lot of people feel tremendous knowing that there will be more, but there are some. I know that those levels of perception of low vibration of energy have been so pervasive that even now they still may feel like it's not possible. I just want, you know, for you, this work and what it's done for you and your life and others, just share what comes up for those people right now that really need love, that really need this knowing that it is possible, that it is possible, that they are loved.
The entire question of, is this possible? How can this be? Why is that possible? How can that be? Is a brain-generated question. It is an ego-generated question. And the answer, the best answer that I can come up with that right now is to reflect back at you that whether something is possible or impossible is a decision that you alone can make. You can decide right in this second that it is possible for you. As long as you say, is this possible? How this can be possible? That's a decision that it is not possible. And you are just one thought away from just opening your mind a little bit, opening your heart a little bit, making your spirit just one molecule more willing to entertain the idea that it is possible for you. We just need 1% willingness. That's really all we need. The one little crack in the door that lets in of your resistance, that lets in the light, and that's all it's needed. Decide that it's possible for you. If you don't know why, ask to be given new perception about it.
Yes.
Give me right perception of what is possible for me.
Yes. Yeah. Give me right now. We can just right now. You can
have
it come in right now.
Yeah, let's open it up.
Yeah, open it up and then begin to move in whatever direction that is that tells you to do. You know what I found, Moira, really fits, I want to say, is I opened with the story of that person who, it's like instantaneously their life started changing, and I knew when I saw them that whatever they'd done, they had released some perception, some low vibration, something that was keeping them at a certain set point, and I knew that they could not stay in the same place they were in. The universe wouldn't even allow it, that as long as they came from this higher vibration and they just took some actions, they moved where they were guided by spirit, that things would change. This is what I want everyone to get. You can be in that space, and if you're not experiencing what you want, if you're not experiencing abundance in your life at some level, you know, it may not be $100,000 coming in, it may just be the abundance of love. If you're not experiencing joy, abundance, happiness, peace of mind, excitement every day as you wake up that something new is coming or something comes in your mind, a new idea, and you're excited to bring it into fruition, if that's not you, it's not a state that is worthy of you. Let's bring you into that divine state that is you, and you'll see how different your world and your perception will be. So I hope this has changed some big perceptions. Any closing words or any final thoughts, Moira?
My perception of you and your entire audience, Darius, is of enormous light, making a difference in the world at this moment and all moments just by breathing in and out. I thank you so much for being the grace that you have prayed to be. I thank you for being the grace you have hoped to find. It is within you. It is yours.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful call, and what a beautiful gift you are as well.